Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Hari Lila number 3, text number 92. Translation. Advaitacharya Goswami is an incarnation of the Lord as a devotee. His loud calling was the cause for Krishna's instructions, Swami Krishna's incarnation. Krishna yadi priti vite karane avatara prathama karane guru vajera sankara. Translation. Whenever Sri Krishna desires to manifest his incarnation on earth, first he creates the incarnations of his respectable predecessors. Pita Mata Guru Adi Yata Manya Gana Pradhame Karane Sabara Pitavite Janma. Respectable personalities such as his father, mother, and spiritual master all take birth on earth first. But this is interesting, huh? Advaita is making loud calls, the calls of desperation, calls of intensity, asking Krishna to come. Evaluating the environment, the problems, and the need, and seeing, hey Govinda, this is a very difficult time, and there is need for your own presence. So you please come, and you put things in place. After all, from time to time, you are coming to annihilate the demons, check the miscreants, and to save your devotees, encourage your devotees. So here is such a need, such a time. Please come forward. And it shows how Krishna is purchased by the devotee's love, dedication, and how he has promised, Namay Bhakya Apanashati, my devotee shall not perish. But then we see devotees go through struggles, they suffer, they have problems. But ultimately Krishna says, I'm there, and I will take care of them. I will give them service. I will bring them back home. So Advaita Gosai said, in this mood, there is a big need. And you have promised that you will maintain what one has and carry what's lacking. But there's a lot that's lacking now. And there's a lot that needs to be maintained. So you come, please come. And compliment and present that which is lacking and that which is to be maintained. Please help so that it will not be taken away. We see that from time to time the message seems to be lost. It seems so. Because never is it really that the knowledge of Krishna really lost fully. There's always opportunity. There's always devotees who come as the message carriers. But then when Krishna, as Lord Chaitanya, is deciding to come, and who is coming, it is none other than Krishna, Samasundara himself, who has taken the bhav of Srimati Radharani and now has come in golden color to have the mood and the anxiety, the desperation, and the affection of Srimati Radharani. But at the same time, it is the Lord appearing as a devotee, showing how to be devoted to himself. So, here's a chance to know how to be devoted to me by following exactly as I do. And now, Krishna Skaiwa is explaining, and when this happens, the Lord sends special internal associates first. He sends sometimes the devas, demigods. And sometimes some of his great associates who assist him, who work with him in the spiritual world, they come before. They come and scout out. They come and set the stage. They come and make the arrangements so that everything will work out just properly. Just like a great person is appearing. So we, oh yes, someone is coming. When? Next week? Next month? We must make preparations. When Prabhupada was on the planet, when we would know that he would be coming to a temple, and everyone would get so surcharged. Oh, you know, 19 more days, Prabhupada will be here. And we discussed some time back that it was a time that devotees were most Krishna conscious. Because when Prabhupada had arrived, sometimes the tendency after a while was to kind of become a little familiar, take things for granted. After Prabhupada had left, sometimes the tendency was kind of business as usual. But when Prabhupada was coming, devotees would become very energized. Some devotees would stay up sometimes for several days, just trying to fix this old Prabhupada's room. We need to paint. We need to fix the plumbing. We need to paint the whole temple. We need to do really maha cleanup. And so devotees would just put everything else aside, all kind of problems, body problems, relationship problems, all kind of second types of priorities, and they want to be focused. Prabhupada is coming. So we have to be ready to receive Prabhupada. So we were saying that we should always try to have this kind of mentality amongst ourselves in our temple. Oh, our Guru days are coming. When? Oh, in a few days. So we have to do what? So we clean the place. We have to be in good behavior. We have to do the things that we were asked to do. And so in this way, there's a consciousness of alertness, of sensitivity, appreciation, teamship, and of empowerment. The boys would get so empowered sometimes when Prabhupada was coming. And they would do things far beyond sort of their normal comfort zone or their normal talents, you know, and abilities. Oh, how are we going to do this? You got to fix the ceiling. We don't have the money. Okay, but I think I can do it. Let me try. Fix it. The boys would do amazing things. And they would also be mindful and thinking, Prabhupada comes, look at this tree in the yard, needs to be trimmed. The yard is clean, and the clean yard. Prabhupada is coming, and to see, we haven't been acting in a good way, Vaishnava etiquette. So we don't want Prabhupada to see this. So many things. But then go into alert, into a healthy arrangement, knowing that we wanted to offer the best of what we could. And should pop up service. But we should always be thinking like that. So we have to be in mission consciousness. We have to be in emergency consciousness. Not fanatical. Not that we have a marathon that never ends. Oh, okay. Next week, another marathon. All right. Two more days, another marathon. No, but we should be in the mood that I can die tomorrow. In the mood that Guru is coming. In the mood that Krishna is coming. In the mood that Krishna has already come. And now he's come, how we serve? How can we serve man? In the mood that Krishna is always with us. And in the mood that the Guru is always there. Now the devotee who's thinking Guru is always available, always there, then it becomes very Krishna conscious. Because one is not thinking, well, I will work on myself later, or I will gradually try to get this together. I will soon make some change. We just see. Next, Janmasmi, I'm going to give up this habit and that habit. Then he said, wait until Ramnavami, I'm sure I'll come to the temple more. I'll stop smoking. I'll do this, do that. By Gopanima, I have given up this habit of drinking and having girlfriends and boyfriends. Okay. And it goes on. But if we're thinking, today, I die, or tomorrow, or today, tomorrow, Guru is coming. Let me be in readiness for service properly. Let me be able to present myself nicely. Let me be able to organize the project such a way that when the spiritual master is taking notice, he will be excited and pleased by the quality of devotion. Let me work this problem out with this devotee, have an argument with, because I don't want my guru to see me in this mood, or to know this is my situation. And so, if we are more conscious like that, then we don't just do things lackadaisically. We don't just do things without a sensitivity. We don't allow Maya to sneak in on us, capture us, and then we procrastinate doing the necessary thing. But if we are using our time, and this is explained by Rupa Goswami, in the nectar of the devotion, discussing the things that will give bhava, because as we attain bhava, it is a door to prema. So we have to reach bhava, state of bhava, then that burns up so many of the previous desires. So we're always looking for pleasure. We're always needing associations and relationships. And so the connection with bhava begins to burn up all the unhealthy things, and that happiness and ecstasy that's coming from bhava encourages one to go farther and deeper in their devotional activities. So it's from that taste of the realizations that are connected with bhava that then opens up for the next experience. So when Bhaditanya comes, based on being invited by his unalloyed devotees, coming to protect them, to serve them, coming even to glorify them, but in order to do these things, he brings his army with him. So first he sends some personalities to come before him. Then next, what happens? Madhava Ishvara Puri Sachi Jagannatha Advaita Chaya Prakata Alase Sahata. Translation. Now here are some of these great personalities. They're very special, who are eternal servants of the Lord, who also appear when he appears. First, Madhavendra Puri, Ishvara Puri, Srimati Sachi Mata, Sri Jagannath Mishra, all appeared with Sri Advaita Acharya. So they're appearing ahead of time, before Krishna himself appears. So Madhavendra Puri, so special in our sampradaya, experiencing Mahabhava, Ishvara Puri, yes, Bhagavatam, spiritual master, Srimati Sachi Mata, Bhagavatam's mother, Sri Jagannath Mishra, his father, and Advaita Acharya, the elder devotee, who is eternally connected with Lord Chaitanya, who is calling him. So all of these senior personalities, they appear for us. Purport. Whenever the Supreme Personality of Godhead descends in his human form, his human, actually human life form, Krishna said, Abhajante Mam Mura, Manasantana Vasata, Param Brahmajana Mama Bhuta Maheswaram. Those who think that when I come, I'm coming in the human, I am mundane. Such people have forefront of knowledge, do not understand my supreme dominion over everything. And on top of that, they are mudas. They're foolish for thinking that I am just some deva or just some yogi or I am in human aspect, human life form. He sends ahead all of his devotees. Why? Because the devotees, they never leave Krishna. Particularly Krishna, but he never leaves Vrindavan. 100% Krishna never even leaves Vrindavan. But then, Krishna, who is coming in this special incarnation arrangement, he leaves. But the devotees are so enraptured with Krishna that they stay with him in the spiritual world. They also want to come with him as he is presenting his message in the material world. They want Krishna in full. So Krishna comes like this. They go, let us go also. Let us go with you. Let us go before you and scout out, make the arrangements. We don't want you to have to do this yourself. We are your servants. So let us go and place things in a certain order. Get things ready for your appearance. If you're going to go in that hellish place, okay. But let us go and make some preparations. So when you come, things are ready for you. When you come, things are set up. When you come, you do what you have to do, and then you can leave and be out of this hellish place. He sends ahead all of his devotees who act like his father and teacher and associates in many roles. Such personalities appear before the descent of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Before the appearance of Lord Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there appeared his devotees, Sri Madhavendra Puri, his spiritual master, Sri Yashvara Puri, his mother, Srimati Sachi Devi, his father, Jagannath Mishra, and Sri Advaita Charya. So all of these elders, senior personalities. So it takes like human, like, you know, the Leela, because he's taking the father, the mother, and he has these older personalities who have a special kind of rasa with them as seniors. But ultimately we know that Krishna does not really take any physical birth. Prakatiya teke achaya sankala samsara Krishna bhakti gandhina visaya yavahara. Translation. Advaita Acharya, having appeared, he found the world devoid of devotional service to Sri Krishna. The people were engrossed in material affairs. It's like sometimes devotees, they take their vacations here and they go home, visit their relatives, family. And they visit them, and then they just see, oh, everyone's engaged in mundane affairs. And they realize, these are my biological relatives. But I love them, of course. They love me. But really, our lifestyles are so different. They are not taking prasadam. They are not hearing Bhagavatam class. They're not chanting the Lord's name. They're not glorifying the great acharyas. They're not even understanding that this body is so temporary and that once you prepare for the transcendence of this material realm. But they are so much trying to see how to make this place work. Even though they're frustrated with anything. And then after being with them for a while, we realize, yeah, they have relatives, but you have so little in common. Because they see you only in relationship to who you used to be. They see you in relationship to what they feel you should be about. They identify with you based on who they think that you are. And all those things have changed for you. But still, we try to tolerate your situation while we keep our minds fixed that we're on a mission. And then we don't get so distracted. But if we forget that we're on a mission, and we enter into such situations, and we start accepting the lifestyle therein, and then it becomes deviation, even farther. Advaitacharya, having appeared, he found the world devoid of devotional service to Sri Krishna, because people were engrossed in material affairs. Kihapape kihapunye karabhisaya bhoga bhakti kanda nahi yatayaya bhava roga. Everyone, we have bogies, yogis, and rogis. The bogies, the cheaters, sense gratifiers, but the yogis, those who engage in austerities. Then we have the rogis, those who are full of disease. And so, this is very common in material culture. Somebody just bogus. And they're engaged in some kind of deviation from cheating and whatnot. Running away from Krishna, going against Dharma. Then there are the rogis who are diseased, diseased mind, sometimes diseased body, but really diseased because they're not understanding what real health is. They're not understanding how to take proper care of the mind and the body, that we maintain it while we have our heights on our home. And the rogis, they have so many unhealthy things in their life, eat unhealthy, engage in constant bad habits. So they are captured by material energy, and that they are diseased. They've got some negative effects from all their material associations and commitments and their habits. Translation. Everyone was engaged in material enjoyment, whether sinfully or virtuously. No one was interested in the transcendental service of the Lord, which can give total relief from the repetition of birth and death. Sometimes you go somewhere, you look around, and you realize, that there's no devotees to associate with. You realize how valuable devotee association is. And you see yourself surrounded by those who are envious of Krishna, by those who even hate Krishna. No one was interested in transcendental service. So this is what Advaitacharya was noticing. Report. Advaitacharya saw the entire world to be engaged in activities of material piety and impiety. Before the devotee of the Lord, even hell can be very palatial and wonderful if one can think and serve Krishna. And even heaven, so-called wonderful places, will be just like hell if one cannot think and serve Krishna. So if one can serve Krishna, then, or have association with the devotees, even the most difficult, taxing environment, not so bad, because you have devotee association. But when you don't have devotee association, then even some opulent arrangement, some place that's very extraordinary, it has less and less value for you, because there's no Sadhu Sangha, there's no Krishna. Because of that, one feels very distraught, will not be happy to live in such a place. So the devotee told it like that. The devotee will even go to hell. They were the most difficult situations, environments. As long as there can be some service, chance to think and hear about Krishna. But if such an environment does not afford such, then however wonderful it may be, the devotee has no interest to hang around in such a place. The fact is that in the material world, there is no scarcity of anything except what material wealth, the Acharyas say the only real scarcity is the scarcity of Krishna consciousness. That ultimately the only real problem is the lack of Krishna consciousness. When there's Krishna consciousness, the devas, the reciprocate, and so one will not have shortages, poverty, sickness as we now know it as. Krishna consciousness affects all of these things. Material necessities are supplied by the mercy of the Supreme Lord. We sometimes feel scarcity because of our mismanagement. But the real problem is that people are out of touch with Krishna consciousness. Everyone is engaged in material sense gratification. The people have no plan for making an ultimate solution to their real problems. What are the real problems? Of course, namely birth, death, disease, and old age. So people make all kinds of arrangements, but they don't deal with the real problem. They still have to die, still grow old, and they still experience disease. These four material miseries are called bhava rog, or material diseases. They can be cured only by Krishna consciousness. Therefore, Krishna consciousness is the greatest benediction for human society. Read 1 or 2 more. We have a lot of work we have to do this morning. Loka dati dehi achara karana hiraya pachara karane lokara kache itahaya. Translation. Seeing the activities of the world, the acharya felt compassion and began to ponder who could act for the people's benefit. So, Advaita Acharya, seeing the pitiful condition the people were in, and really having great compassion, then he does like all the great devotees do. He agitates their minds and thinking how to help. They agitate their bodies and minds and thinking how to render more service to the Lord, to help others, to share the knowledge that one has, for people to see that there is an alternative. Purport. This sort of serious interest in the welfare of the public make one a bona fide acharya. So a significant aspect of being a bona fide acharya is compassion toward others, especially those who are suffering, those who are confused, those who are bewildered. Acharya does not exploit his followers. Since the acharya, the confidential servant of the Lord, his heart is always full of compassion for humanity in its suffering. He knows that all suffering is due to what? The absence of devotional service to the Lord. And therefore he always tries to find ways to change people's activities, making them favorable for the attainment of devotion. That is the qualification of an acharya. Although Sri Advaita Prabhu himself was powerful enough to do the work, as a submissive servitor, he thought without the Lord, Krishna's Lord Chaitanya's appearance, no one can improve the fallen condition of society. Of course, he won Mahaprabhu's association also. In the grim clutches of Maya, the first-class prisoners of the material world wrongly think themselves happy because of what? They're powerful, they're rich, they're resourceful. People think, oh, I'm happy because I got money, I have power, I have influence. I finally got in the position in the workforce that I want. I finally have become famous. Now I've made a new record. I'll be famous. Now I've won the lottery. And so, I won the election. But will they really be happy? Only temporarily. These foolish creatures do not know that they are nothing but play dolls in the hands of material nature. That at any moment, material nature will do what? Pitiless intrigue can crush them to dust. All their plans for godless activities. You see, so often people have so many plans. And then overnight, those plans be totally disrupted. Overnight, they get disrupted because they find out they have cancer. They get sacked from a job. They made so many plans based on get this money coming in. I can do this in 2 months, this in 1 year, and I'll do like this. But then, overnight, those plans could change. They find out they have AIDS, they have cancer, some other kind of disease in common. But it happens a lot here in South Africa. It's like the people get trained, you know, to be teachers. They get trained in some corporation, some business. And then after a few years, they come down with AIDS, a few years, and they die. And so, it takes so much to train someone to be able to have someone who's somehow going to stay around and they're going to die. So many teachers get trained, and the percentage is like over a third of them in 10 years. They've gotten sacked, they've gotten AIDS, and they die. And so many businesses, Koloko Chami, in the Durban, right in Johannesburg, and has a lot of people working under him. He says, every week, somebody is not coming to work because they're sick, because the AIDS issue is such a serious thing. And that they're constantly having to retrain people because somebody dies off. Get another one down, and train someone else. And so in so many ways, people had plans, all kinds of ideas, and rough situation. Die, chronic illness, or people work so hard in their jobs now, and they're told to be, they're expected to be loyal, but their bosses are not loyal to them. There's a merger, a downsizing. They say, well, I'm sorry, but, you know, you have to go. Nothing to do this here. But in America, they give you, they call it, you know, the pink slip or the yellow slip. But when they give it to you, they give it with a security guard. And they escort you to your desk and give you a box and let you put all your things in it. And they walk you out. The people get so angry, so disturbed. They sabotage things. They cause problems. And then many corporations are even more secretive. They tell you and let you come back and get your things after the hours of the work is closed. What a security guard. So that there's nobody around with you and getting all your things and you're making your last respect to your desk, your computer, the corporation, after you've given your 18 years, 20 years loyal service. They've told you how much they appreciate you in the past, and you thought you had some security. And now, you are just being treated like a criminal in the company of the people who you've been all around with, working with. And often when there's this kind of downsizing, people get so harsh and so insecure because they're thinking, I hope it's you and not me. Mm-hmm. They've been on teams working together. They've been living together in the workforce for many years, working together. And now they become like envious of enemies. So, because everybody has a gun in America, it makes it even more hard. 1/3 out of every American has a gun. So in this room, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. There are 12 of us, 12 people in America. Then, what, 4 of us would have guns. But 12, you get 12 people together, and more than likely, by the average statistics, there are 4 of those people. They have guns right on them, or in their car, in their house. Anytime they carry it on them. And so, you can imagine then, the slightest thing happens. Someone gets so angry. They go into their car, they go home, they come back the next day, they just start shooting up the office. They shoot the CEO, they shoot their immediate supervisor, shoot the people around them, shoot the supervisor for causing them to get sacked, shoot the people around them because they're envious, you guys still got jobs, okay, You think you want to have security, happiness, and suffering, you're going to suffer too. Bam, bang, bam. And time and time again, people are so afraid. So the general policy is, when you sack someone, you call them in, you let them know, and then you watch them, you get them out of the place, and they can't come back. Too. Is that how they do here? They do something like that? Only for misconduct. And exploit you. You can be the best worker, and now if you can't, they can't keep you on. They escort you out just like you're a criminal. Because they know people will be furious, angry. They don't want you to disturb, you know, other employers. And sometimes everyone like they don't even know about it. People know this person is going to get sacked tomorrow. And they just, you know, keep their mouth quiet and just think, well, I'm glad it's them and not me. And then people treating you strange, they're not talking to you. Then you come and you know, they give you a box. You have to do everything out of your desk. Take your name tag away from the office. And now, you just walk right out. You gotta find another job. People commit suicide like this, and nervous breakdown goes on. Because sometimes, more than not, they really have thought they have security. And they really have planned. It's difficult sometimes when people have high positions and they're getting up in age. Because now somebody's like 45, 50 years old. And they've been working in the company for 25 years. The vice president of a company, even, or something, supervisor. And now the company is in financial difficulty, or it's been bought out, or the merger, or something's happened. And now that person, who is 52 years old, who's quite senior, is in the most difficult situation. They have a high salary, and so they've bought a home, and maybe they got a cottage, and maybe they have one or two children in school. And so their whole life is based on this salary and the lifestyle. And now all of a sudden, they have no job. They're too old to start a new profession. And in most places, people who would hire someone who has their skills wants a person who's 30 years old, or 35, who's going to work twice as hard, and who is young, and passionate, and aggressive, and greedy. Huh? And then this older person who's been so loyal, who's helped to build up so much, and has lived nice for a while, and at a time when they should be able to have more peace in their life, they can't. So they're too old, they're too young to retire, too old to start a new profession, and now they're bewildered. And so much in anxiety because they really feel cheated. We can see how the Vedic system was so, you know, uniquely arranged, because at 50, then one was supposed to pursue renunciation and move away from all these kind of things, and be able to look back without any sense of regret, and realize, well, they've married, they've brought forth children, children now are ready to go on their own, and they can be, you know, fixed in their devotion, live simply, and have some future ahead of them as they prepare themselves to meet Krishna. But now, people not having any kind of higher goals, when they lose, you know, this stability, it's like life now has just cheated them. They went to good school, they worked hard, they got a good job, they made money, they had a so-called good wife, good children, and did all the things they're supposed to do. And now they look back and they see themselves as a failure. And so they maybe sometimes try to get another job somewhere. They feel so miserable. To go around, you know, like a dog. Can you hide me? Like a dog, kind of, where's the water? Where's the food? Where's sense gratification? And they feel so intimidated because more than likely, oh, they get interviewed and people do not accept them. or they somehow struggle and they get a job half the salary of what they had before. So even though they're working there, they hate themselves. They hate life. They're just tolerating because they feel like they just got chumped off. And they did. So as spiritualists, we do not look back and think, okay, I'm 55 years old, 53 years old, and what is life? What have I done? Because we can realize that. We were saying yesterday how so nice that so many of the older devotees who came to assist Srila Prabhupada in the early days, that now we're old and we're sick and we don't have the same energy, the same strength. That's wonderful. We can look back and say, wow, I gave 30 years in the ISKCON company. I gave 30 years for the International Corporation of ISKCON, National Society. That is Lord Chaitanya's branch of Lord Chaitanya's own mission, his own army. And now we can prepare ourselves for more and more study and less management and less anxiety. We think, okay, so for someone who's been a householder for many, many years, and they come of age later, and their children are older, you know, and everything else. And they're happy. You don't have to look back and think, so I gave all of my time and energy, and, you know, what is this? And the people who think that way, and that's material, they think, well, Prabhu, you know, you have to understand, I went out on Sankirtan for 18 years. I mean, I added up what I, you know, what I gave the temple. I gave the temple $20 million. I mean, what do I have? I have anything. I gave the temple 20. I mean, I collected, I did a miracle most of the time, and I made $1,000. And I was going out every day, years and years. And look now. Now, what do I have? Well, first, they were brahmacharis, and the position of the brahmachari was just to be at the mercy of preaching and serving. And what they did was for the mission, was for Krishna, and they will benefit from that in such a way. But if they're thinking, all that time, I mean, I could have been involved in making money, and I could have so much now that I could have. Yeah, it's true. And of course, since most devotees do get married, we do have to think a little more intensely about a person's future. When someone does come, man or woman, we do expect they should have a simple life and just study and serve and keep the mind simple in that way. But we also must more or less understand that over 90% of those devotees are not going to stay around and live in the temple, and that they are going to marry and they're going to have to take care of family. We do also have to be careful that someone is not being impractical or unrealistic. And they also become very angry and shocked that they gave so much time, and then all of a sudden one day they get married, they don't have a clue how to take care of a family, how to take care of a wife, how to have any funds to take care of children. Then they get angry at the movement because they think, just see, I don't have anything. And of course, some ways they have reason to be angry. Small sense. If there's not support from the congregation in the strong projects where we have real good brahmachari, strong brahmachari, strong grihasthas, strong congregation. And that's very important. We can't run a project, you know, without a strong congregation. You need to have a strong congregation. Otherwise, the devotees have to do everything, and then they get blown out, get exhausted, overwhelmed, financial difficulties, etc. But there should always be development of a strong congregation. And the congregation helps with so many of the financial and the public relations, the community activities, and the devotees can focus more on the preaching and the duty services, etc., the study, and the courses and seminars and the classes in this way. And we don't have to be so much in anxiety about some of the basic, you know, material things. So we have like that. Then when someone gets married, then of course the community gives the blessings, and there is some counseling involved, or mentorship, well then that person can be helped as they make the transition. So here is Brahmachari, Brahmachari, getting married, and now someone is going to help them to get started, get them some employment, and give them a loan or arrange so that they can get a good start in such way. So now that Brahmachari who's been serving for 15 years, and the Brahmacharini who's been serving for 10 years, and they get married, and they feel even more excited about the experience because they're thinking, it works so much, Brahmacharini, Brahmachari, and the devotee support system, helping to find a nice husband, a nice wife, and on top of that, they're helping to guarantee that we can go on and give value, you know, to the community by being able to have services and assisting us in getting some employment so that we can have, you know, a good balance. So, not many projects, but a few projects. You can go on and on and on for a while, but then you're seeing people come and they go, people get burned out, and it's just too much work, too much financial anxiety, etc. So there's really a need to expand more and to find ways to get the community more involved, and so everyone feels on board in this way. Then you have more, you know, more of a support system. And we see that in this little reading, our Lord Chaitanya was invited by a great acharya, and then Krishna set up, you know, his own support system. He sent Jagannath Mishra, he sent Madhavendra Puri, Ishvara Puri, the great acharya. They all came before. And then some came with him. You know, and then some came afterwards. So you see, Krishna, he doesn't try to do everything by himself. He could. Even the way he could have done it by himself. Prabhupada says, you know, in the purport. But he didn't want to. He wanted to be with his great associates and friends in this way. And Lord Chaitanya likes to give the devotees credit. But he also wants to do these things with, you know, with these special devotees. And it makes it more dynamic, such a way. More wonderful, more people having a chance to participate in the Leela. So when the devotees in the temple are strict, and the congregation gets more inspired to want to help because they feel, oh, I want to help these people who are so serious. And then the congregation comes up to a higher level because they see that, you know, what is possible. They, you know, very motivated to try to connect more and do more services in such a way. So many projects, we have so much trouble. The deity service, you know, we have so many Brahmins, you know, who initiated in the congregation. But then people don't feel a loyalty to the service. Or if we give initiation and they think, okay, I got my guru now, I got initiated, all right, I'm all right. But that's the beginning, not the end. You initiated, and now you have to be more accountable into seeing that the mission goes on. Not that we have a few devotees struggling to do this service, that service. And we have 50 Brahmins in the community and a couple of hundred devotees or something. And it's hard to have things done. But if we don't have trust and empower the congregation, then they won't feel so inspired. They won't do much. And if you're, oh, you only contact us just only when there's an emergency and you want money, then you feel inspired. You feel like they're being used. But as the congregation is brought in ways to help to facilitate, that means the devotees are the nucleus because they understand the particular needs. And many of the congregations, sometimes they're new, or they don't understand the dynamics of how the temple runs, or the dynamics of Prabhupada's vision. But if they respect us, and they see that we are working together nicely amongst ourselves, then they become eager also to come forth more. Even to the point that you don't even have to request They will come forth more because they want to do more things, want to identify. Feel more proud of their whole experience. They want to do what they can and that, you know, in helping their society. So this is a reading, you see, that Advaita was calling out loudly for Mahaprabhu to appear. And then he's appearing, but he's making the arrangements, strategizing. So preaching involves strategy. We have to look a little closer at what can work and how it can work. Look a little closer at how we organize things. Because if we don't organize, if we don't agitate the mind, then Maya will agitate our minds for us. In other words, if we don't plan, then Maya will plan for us. And will offer so many opportunities and will capture our time and our interest. So we have to plan present and look in terms of what we want to try to arrange for the future. Start putting things in place. It helps you guarantee a healthy future. We just go on, you know, kind of mechanically, a crisis management. We'll do that, you know, for the next 10 years. We have to have some vision of just what do we expect to see or what like to happen in our project, you know, 5 years from now. Just what, so we put more energy into because it's really working. What things we need to maybe to give less time, what things we need maybe to stop, because the kind of amount of energy we're putting into it based on the returns that we're getting, it's just diminishing returns. Putting so much energy into this particular, you know, school. But we're not getting the certification as we can, as we do in other places. So maybe instead of having 5 university programs, we have 3 we focus on with more quality and develop, and the devotees are less stressed out, less burnout. There's more time to focus on those things, and that develops more. Instead, we have to evaluate things like that, see, based on our resources, our manpower, based on the effects we're trying to have. Is it really the best to have 5 university or 4 university programs, but 1 or 2 of them seem not to be growing, or people not reciprocating, you know, sufficiently, and 1 and 2 or 3 others, greater reciprocation, is growing, has life, so maybe we. For now, we focus on these 3 and give more quality time to this and let that expand more in this way. So it's a constant kind of evaluation to see what is working nicely, to give more time to it, what needs to be fixed, sometimes, you know, what needs to be dropped. So we'll stop to any questions from comments. Mm-hmm.
I was thinking if there's one story about Shyamachandra Prabhu and his wife Malati, and they were very desperate. And one day they went out on the street and all these notes were blowing and no wind, and they picked up a few $100s. And then there's that story about Mahadevini in Vrindavan, and they were also collecting and they needed $400 and someone came.
Yeah.
And then recently I heard somebody say that Shyamachandra Prabhu said one of the problems in the movement now is that devotees don't have the same kind of courage that they used to have when they were, you know, in the early days. And I'm just thinking that in that respect, it's kind of like that wanting to depend on Krishna and the most of the spiritual master, that sort of nishtha is like, seems to have gone a little bit like that sort of dependence, that move of independence. How do you explain that?
Yes, interesting. When devotees have more of a pioneering spirit, ready to take a risk, healthy risk, but ready to take risk, they see that Krishna reciprocates more. When devotees' faith and also their teamship is stronger, then Maya comes through less, Krishna comes through more. But also in the earlier days, devotees had a greater sense of teamship. Now there's so many things that, you know, people disturb, their minds disturb them. you know, we didn't have the fall down. We didn't have all the different shades of Vaishnava, you know, philosophy. We didn't have so many disgruntled people. There was more kind of simplicity and selflessness. So that brought forth Krishna. Krishna variable was coming through more in that way. And even now it can happen. We can see that when we are endeavoring more and pioneering more, depending more on Krishna, then many kind of results happen, even beyond, you know, beyond our understanding. You know, just things will happen. But so much has to do with faith also. And the faith and dedication is stronger. Then you see that. You surrender more genuinely, and Krishna reciprocates more. Now the other thing with sociological is that because we were brahmacharis and brahmacharinis, you know, for the most part, it wasn't that there was many householders. These early days, some, but not so many. And even the householders, in those early days, you know, they didn't have like now, or somebody can have four or five children and be older. So they could also, see, materially, live more simple, and just be more dependent on whatever happened. And maybe just as great as all those other things, is that the institution, in some ways, has become less able, you know, to support its members. Now that sounds strange because now we have more facilities. But why? It's that the members were expecting less, and there was then less of a problem also. And so now it's the temples having financial difficulty, you know, manpower shortage and whatnot. Less finance in many places. And because you had so many devotees who were going out doing sankirtan, selling paintings, selling books. And so you had a greater financial base. And from that, everybody was feeling, I guess, a little more secure also, and even unconsciously. But now, you know, devotee can very easily have an issue in the temple, you know, and there's no money, you know. So devotee needs to get dentistry work done, devotee needs to get an operation. And so many times the president will say, well, I think you better go home, you know, talk to your, you know, your mother, father, to help you. And then the devotee goes to the parents, and the family looks at them like, hey, what's going on with you? You've been working with those people for 12 years, and then you need to get some medicine, you need to get an operation, and they send you home. They don't give you a salary, and when you get sick, they don't take care of you. Why are you living with those people? But now when you have a more sense of congregation, then when that devotee gets ill, you just call the devotee doctor, life member doctor, or the congregation doctor, and you let them know such and such needs to see you. When can you work him in and give that person some treatment? You see again how the devotees inside, the devotees in the congregation working together, then you have a stronger support system. Now that same devotee who's had that experience and be more into pioneering and be more dedicated, knowing that he or she is, you know, given a certain amount of security and protection, and when there is a need, that there'll be some arrangement in order to be able to address that need. Because if all of these things not happening to the same degree, it causes more maintenance consciousness than growth and pioneering. And maintenance is in the mode of what? The mode of passion. So it's a little different. But faith is probably one of the most prominent things. We had stronger faith, eager to take risk, pioneer. And we see that many miracles happen almost every day. Any other question? So to reclaim that, we have to look closer at what is weakening our faith. We have to also see how to appreciate each devotee a little more, so that there is more of the teamship. We as well have to see how to encourage the congregation for their well-being as well as for the project. And then we need to look closer at what's working, and what isn't working, to see what needs to be adjusted. There's so many projects now, it's maintenance. And you notice that the devotees don't have a chance to preach as much, and it becomes really harder for the brahmacharis than in a place where, it's just maintenance, which is, again, one of the mood of passion. But then before a short time, brahmacharis not studying, living the life, renunciation, simplicity, but also has to be so much worried about the finances in this way, that way, and doing Vaishya work rather than supramental work. And then it's only a matter of time before Brahmachari also is having a wife, and 7 kids, because it just leads to one thing after another. Say, oh, it was such a nice wife, Brahmachari. Since he got married, he really aged really quick. To leave the vibrant kirtan, give him nice glasses. And now it just looks an anxiety all the time. Thinking how he's going to get this money, get that money. But that's life. Yes. One is that there's studied to be leadership from the front, not from the behind. In other words, as everything is said and done, there's need for strong leadership. You have to be caring leadership. Otherwise, everything is so kind of in, so general that people just kind of do whatever is comfortable for them, whatever they want, and you get a real weakened kind of atmosphere. There's a need for accountability. There's a need for a distribution of services and delegation. And also, second, that there need to kind of find out people who are struggling with a sudden or whatever, to try to communicate with them to see what is needed for you to help, would help you to be able to, to be more on. How can I help? The board can ask, or the chairman of the board can find out, or the president. So, I noticed that, you're not chanting with the devotees, you're not coming to Mangal Aarti in like weeks and weeks, you're not coming for classes, or notice that you're spending a lot of time, you see me doing this, doing that. That's outside of devotional service. And in some cases, you may find that as there's community, more personal communication, see what does the person need, or how can you help in that way. That is there. So more of a focus on accountability, and also to try to see closer what is responsible for the problem. Then you may find that somebody says, oh, well, this is where I am at this time. And, I mean, 4 or 5 rounds a day for me, this is what I can do. And, going out at nighttime and doing this, doing that. And, this is me. And so, oh, I see. But living in the temple, this is not the right consciousness as much as living in the temple. Because you live in the temple, and we're not having the conscience honoring the process the Prabhupada gave us in the temple. Because it's not that everybody should live in the temple. There's some devotees who just the nature of their life, they're just not so much into a congregation, they're not so much into what? A community type of move. And some devotees who just have habits, it's not so good for living in the temple. Because those habits will bring weakness and contamination in the environment for those who are trying to be more strict. People should realize that living in the temple is an honor. To be able to be more directly involved in the service of the deities by coming for the programs, dressing them, cooking, being able to hear classes on a daily basis, have the opportunity. Once you realize that this is actually an honor, and that we should be, you know, a little more selective. But now, again, so many places we have manpower shortage, and somebody said he wanted to live in a temple. Oh, yes, yes. Or we encourage them to have it in the temple, even though that, you know, they're not so qualified. But where there's a stricter environment, someone wants to live in a temple, we study them for a while and make sure that they know what was expected of them and what we expect of that person. And then everybody benefits more because the atmosphere, you know, is stronger. Otherwise, you have people who live in the temple, they make it almost like a hotel. They do the minimum just to be around. And their minds are really not into the programs. No, they're not sadhakas. And such people, they're weak in the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. We jeopardize purity for convenience. Later, you know, we won't have either. Because Krishna will not be pleased and, you know, things will one problem after another. But if we put purity as the primary concern, then we'll see that we'll struggle initially. But then, as you were mentioning, then we'll see, you know, more of the Krishna factor coming to Krishna variable. When you're really at a dying state, just don't have manpower, then we may have to allow some arrangements, but it should be, you know, but it should be temporary. Otherwise, it keeps on like this. Then what happens is that when new people come, they kind of connect according to what the atmosphere is. But better, somebody's not a sadhika, it's better that they live outside and that they work as much as they can to come and help, you know, with the temple. Because, see, to be honest, somebody's not a sadhika, and they're going to last for so long anyway. It's only a matter of time before they're going to go and leave. Because their real focus is not really Krishna, but they're doing Krishna, but still their main interest may be in other things. So it's only a matter of time, and you're going to have to, you know, replace that person anyway. Krishna, Radharani, I mean, the system is that they only let you stay and come so close if you stay in the right consciousness. They give you a chance to try to work on yourself, you know, rectification. But if one doesn't, there's only a matter of time before they move out the temple, or they get distracted, or they have a fall down, and they have to be, there's some discrepancy in their life, finances, or other things. Only a matter of time. Because not being a sadhaka means your senses are not controlled. Senses are not sufficiently controlled, or you're not working on trying to control them, then it means there's some areas that the senses are going to be even more out of control in a more kind of a rough way. There's going to be a problem. There's no way somebody cannot be a sadhaka and go on year after year in a temple, you know, and be in good standing. Any amount of time. Krishna is not so cheap. At the same time, we see Krishna says, "You can't, you know, always think of me. If you can't follow all this process of sadhana bhakti, you know, then you work for me. But not if you work in the environment, you know, where they're supposed to be sadhakas. That you have your apartment out, your flat out, your house out, and you come and do service as much as you can." Because there are those people who can really work hard. They work hard. But they just don't have much interest in reading and chanting. And they don't have much interest in coming to programs. But in time, Maya will employ them more also. So, you know, we have to be realistic also in the life. There's certain things that are connected with having, certain things that happen because we're not really getting so much taste from the basic essence of Krishna consciousness, then it's going to be a desire to get that taste from some other place. We have some people who work really hard. We're happy they're around because they work hard, but later it's another bit of disappointment. Now the question is, as managers, you know, how do we deal with that? Because yeah, work to be done. If somebody's ready to do it, you have to get that person to, you know, to do it. And that's fair, but it also kind of sends the wrong message to that person. It kind of sends a message to the person, you know, that you're really okay. And the individual isn't. And then they begin to accept that they're okay. And they, when they have trouble, you kind of cut off guard because they're thinking, this is all right. We want people to know that we love you, we need you, we want you to do the necessary, but this is the standard. And so you're not at that standard to live within the institution. No problem. You live outside and you work and do what you can to assist, help where you can. At the same time, in the back of your mind should be that there is a higher standard that you should be trying to come up to. If you can't, then you're honest with the fact that you're not ready to come up to the higher standard. But then you don't live in an environment where the higher standard is, you know, is to be practiced. And where we live in the shelter of the temple, then there should be a greater sense of accountability. Otherwise, what happens? Otherwise, it's actually unfair to those who are trying to be sadhakas. Because those who are, it's like somebody's trying to get off drugs. And there's people living with them who are still, you know, taking drugs. Somebody's trying to get off alcohol. And there are people who are still associating in the same group who are still taking alcohol. So that can entice the other person to start taking alcohol. Or it makes too much strain on the other person who's trying to stop taking the alcohol. And it minimizes the protection. So when you bring people in like that, it kind of leaves the sadhakas with, you know, with less protection. Because you have to deal with the consciousness and the energy that, you know, such people bring into the temple. We have to reach out more to protect those devotees who are trying to, you know, make more authentic sacrifice, you know, and be sadhakas. Same time I'm saying we have to encourage the congregation. So that means sometimes one in who is not sadhaka becomes like first class helper in the congregation. That's the difference from, you know, living in the temple. There's some of the people in the congregation do all of these things. They help out at the same time. They follow all the rules and regulations for themselves. Now, believe it or not, devotees in the congregation will follow the rules and regulations more, you know, more emphatically when they see devotees in the temple following more. So much for one of the best examples of temple, you know, is what we find, you know, in the Chaupati temple, where you have a strong congregation because you have strong devotees. Because the devotees themselves in the temple are renounced. Brahmacharis are very renounced. Devotees are very renounced. So it just automatically raises the bar of the devotees who are congregation. And they automatically feel more obliged, you know, to help out. And when somebody doesn't have it, then there's a system, an arrangement, you know, to help that person. So one doesn't have to be distracted about preaching because renouncers are just preaching. And then the others are facilitating. And they want to facilitate because they see how the devotees in the temple are so dedicated and so compassionate and, you know, and so simple, you know, sadhakas. You feel, what can I do? I want to help. Never happened. The congregation will be very respectful when they see people coming to the programs, people reading, people giving classes, chanting their rounds. If they're not hearing that this person fell down, that person fell down. You know, in Johannesburg, and we're hearing, and in Pretoria, oh, this person fell down. This person is a leader, and fell down. And someone, this person was an older body, fell down with somebody in the temple, so called Brahmachari, called Brahmachari, and they fall down. The congregation then it makes them lose faith. And they kind of feel, why should I work so hard at my job and get my money to the temple when they're not really being authentic saddhus? They should go out and get a job themselves and start pretending. Why should I be trying to be so strict in my home and whatnot, and I think at the temple, they're not also hearing, and they're not chanting, and so on, then settles in at a, you know, at a lower level, you know, within the congregation. There are two cases of just coming in. I expected it, but two cases came. I came in, and major responsible people and leaders in Pretoria and in Linz, you know, sexual violence. And in the congregation, you know, knowing this, maybe it makes them lose faith. Any other question? Kulam Sankirtan works very hard. 5 or 6 years, the average, and the person is thinking, you know, different. Someone becomes a leader, and they stay there 4 or 5 years, 5 or 6 years, and then after that, you know, they resign, or they get sacked, or they fall away, or something. So yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, things certainly happen, or can happen that way. At the same time, we have some temple leaders who've been, you know, just like for the Ratha Yatra, Bhakti Marg Swami, he comes from Canada. He's been the temple president for 20-something years. And he's just, you know, very pukka, very simple, very austere, very dedicated. You know, very happy in his Krishna consciousness. You know, one time there was some outside devotees trying to, because he had a North American president. I personally stopped it. They were trying to give him a lot of trouble. And I had sent in the committee to investigate. I came myself and studied it. We all met. And I just had to confront them and tell them, you know, you're not going to do this. You're not going to, you know, bring all these rumors against this person. Where's the proof? And you have to get to clear the air right now. And he stayed on. And so it doesn't have to be like that. But if one is not constantly careful and constantly trying to reach out and be the servant, you know, then there won't be a problem. Now, in terms of the devotees in the temple, 5 or 6 years, we as leaders have to be a little more sensitive that there's a chance that after 5 or 6 years, this nice girl who's a brahmacharini will be more in the mood, you know, of wanting a husband. And we should expect, okay, now how do we see how to facilitate that? Or this brahmachari, that unless there is very, very strong brahmachari support system, unless that brahmachari has really made up in his mind that this is what he wants to do, that even though he's thinking he's going to be brahmachari, 5 or 6 years later, you know, he's going to want to get married. And so we have to look at this person's future and not be shocked when it happens that he says, oh, well, I think I know I want to get married. Or not to think, well, Prabhu, I think you shouldn't, because we need to keep on, you know, washing the pots. Mm-hmm. And if you get married, then you're not going to be at home washing your own pots. So you should stay here and wash the pots. So these are the Krishna pots. Don't worry about your pots there. Krishna's pots are directly for his, you know, his own boga. So, no, we shouldn't want to just keep someone. Just like I see sometimes, and it actually makes me a little angry sometimes because I see people suffer. And I see sometimes in some projects, there's single girls who are being consciously and unconsciously instructed just to stay single. And then they do that and they work hard and they get 35, 40 years old and they want to marry. Now they want to marry at 35 and 40. 40 years old they want to marry. And now the men who are available at 40 years old want to marry a girl who's 25 years old. So now she's worked very hard and dedicated, and she's getting older, she's 40, 45 years old. Now she's thinking, I really need a husband also. And now, you know, there's no husband. When I first came to Durban, at the second, I think, year, some devotees, I heard them talking, and I thought, wow. They were saying, if you want to find a husband, don't join the Hare Krishna movement. I said, what are you talking about? And so then I saw several of the older Indian girls, you know, not having a husband. And some of them were thinking, well, if I wouldn't have joined the movement, then I could have, if I would have lived in a temple, then I could have, you know, had a husband by now, and nice house, nice fence, nice curtains. And now what do I have? I'm in a Brahmacharya ashram, Brahmacharya Avachara ashram, with three other people living in the same little room, who I don't even like very much, and this is my life. And every now and then, you know, someone gets married, I'm supposed to be happy that they're getting married, where's my husband? So, we shouldn't encourage. I saw that in Australia also, that the way the leadership was functioning was just sending young ladies out, you know, to do the pick. And some of them really needed to get married. They were constantly being preached to, you know, not to get married, so they could just keep, you know, making money and go out, you know, 6 days a week. And I saw, yeah, these young girls are doing it now, but they're going to be very disenchanted later. And they're also going to feel that they were exploited. Because in one sense, they were, you know, that they should be given opportunity to have a husband. Or not just wait until they get so much in anxiety, you think, okay, so, oh, you want a husband? All right, and this guy is also in anxiety, he's very agitated, so the two of you should marry. This doesn't work like that one. He's Sankirtan leader, and you are a good Sankirtan devotee, so put you guys together. I even keep on doing Sankirtan. It should be based on just that kind of convenience. And some marriages did happen like that. I mean, that's one thing we did make a mistake in the older days, although there's so many more devotees, so much more facility, because there was a artificial kind of move toward renunciation, that when people did need to get married, sometimes there wasn't sufficient care and attention about, you know, how the marriages were arranged. And that's brought in a lot of the divorces also. Like so many of the earlier marriages that end in divorce. Because there should be much more mindfulness about what is expected. Should be a tremendous counseling before people decide to marry, so that they are understanding what this entails. Should be tremendous open communication between the two people, so that they can understand what the other partner is also expecting, to see whether this thing can really have more tendency to work. And not just because they are both devotees, that somehow when they get married, it's going to happen. Because they're going to have to deal with their personality, have to deal with their issues. Have to deal with their understanding of devotional service, what they expect. Any last question?
How did you think generally in Guru spiritual life, the majority line of the devotion, majority of devotees, is making mind against the spiritual life? Sometimes you just think they're kind of trying to open the position.
I have that balance. Yeah. And that's where we have to then look close to see. Sure. Which is natural. I mean, there are times when we're just so overworked, or we're tired, and we're sick, and we have to get extra rest. That's natural. Yes. But when it becomes a pattern, then it's dangerous. Becomes a habit, of having weak sadhana. Or where we have to look close and see, sadhana is the priority. At the same time, we have to keep the building open. We have to keep things happening. So now, what do we do looking at both of these? And so, what things maybe we need to maybe stop at this time, because it's too much on the devotees. At the same time, certain things we necessarily have to do, so that we're able to maintain body and soul together, able to maintain the project. All of this is what is to be reflected on as we look at the future. That even if we have to cut some corners at the present time, we must plan in such a way that this will not be the way that we keep on functioning. And so without making some initial concerns about what we want to do 6 months from now, 2 years from now, we just keep doing the same thing. And after a while, we have devotees getting burnt out because there's so much working and they can't breathe, or they feel like everything is centered around, you know, money, money, money. So that means we just have to realize, yes, at this point, we are in a somewhat of a crisis. And it has to be a certain amount of exerted effort on the part of everyone. But how do we try to organize it so that there is more, you know, more quality sadhana? And we organize it so that we have distribute some of the work a little bit better amongst everybody. How do we organize in such a way that one definitely feels alert, active, and responsible and accountable, but at the same time, the person feels that they're getting support. Now the best way to speak about this is that there are needs on both sides. That each devotee really has genuine spiritual needs according to the ashram, according, you know, to their situation. And each devotee also has genuine obligations that they should be responsible for. See, the need, and I'm not talking about wants, genuine spiritual needs. The spiritual needs of a brahmachari are different than the spiritual needs of a grihastha. The different needs of a brahmachari who's 21 years old is different from a brahmachari who's 50 years old. The different needs of a householder who has two children is different from a householder, you know, who has seven. And we have to realize that. Now, on the other end, is that the obligations and responsibilities for the different individuals to the institution are also different according to their situation. And so now when that individual's needs are being addressed by the institution, then they can often be more accountable to carry out their responsibilities to the institution. If someone is having a particular kind of need, say they're a brahmachari who's, you know, 50 years old, and they're being kind of treated like a brahmachari who's 21, then they're not going to reciprocate often as well as they could or should, because they're going to feel like they're not taken care of, protected, understood, dealt with, and valued. And so when somebody doesn't feel valued, then they do not give as much value or we say commit as much as they should. So somebody's a brahmachari and they're really trying to be, you know, ecumenical, but they're being constantly put in a situation where they have to act as a vaishya who's more in the mood of a householder. So that person is not going to feel as happy in the institution, not going to give as much as they could of themselves, and there'll be a breakdown maybe at some point. They may just feel like, you know, I want to live outside or something, you know. So there are times when it's like kind of what happened in a lot of places, what happened here at one point, is that the institution was demanding and sometimes facilitating. There was a good effort. Because he was really trying in some ways. You know, he was trying to help to take care of people. Some motivation was there, but it was definitely helping in some cases, you know, really, really nicely. So now, what's needed, every place, not only here, and some places are working out better than others, is for the leadership to recognize, I can't just treat all these people the same and deal with them the same, because this person isn't in a different order, or this person has different propensities. And so if I get everybody just kind of collecting money or doing things for money, some people have more of that natural ability to do that, and they're comfortable with that, and others, it's going to be such out of their sync, out of sync, it's going to put them in distress, etc. Even a person who has that ability for making money, still they have to be dealt with it, and they're not overworked or everything dropped on that particular person. Now when we look at the people who are in a congregation and we don't expect the same because we look a little more personally, this person is, let's do temple first, this person is in the temple, and so, you know, she's, you know, 32 years old, and she's single. And so you expect something. This brahmachari is 30 years old. Now this woman is in the temple and she's 55 years old. And so we really can't think that she can do all the things or expect the same thing as a person who's 32. It just doesn't work like that. Because then I'll get frustrated. Someone's a little older, they may not be able to function so well in a room with three other mothers as the 19 or the 20-year-old, you know, mother could. And now she's a little older, and although she's not wanting sense gratification, she needs more of her own space, in that sense. And so, you know, if we look at these things to take care of people in this way, then they give more, and they feel more Krishna conscious, you know, at the same time. So it's kind of difficult because with this manpower shortages and immediate problems have to be dealt with. But if we keep only dealing with things in the mood of manpower shortages, it'll be a problem. I mean, I had an example. You know, I don't do hands-on management most places, but sometimes, you know, I have to come forth. So in Giranagari, we had this case of like two of our best devotees. They're very young. One mother, Mavartik, and Brahmaharta. One was even my secretary. And so he was a simple, nice brahmachari, and thought he wanted to be brahmachari for the rest of his life. And then he became, then this girl who was very devotional, somehow they just clicked. People just struck their hearts. And so they were very surrendered and very hardworking. And the girl, it's like when anybody came there, she was like one of the main devotees who induced people to come. She was in charge of the guest facilities and so many things, and very talented. And so at one point they came to me, and they wanted to know, they were thinking that they should move out the temple and, you know, go back to school in certain areas and be able to, you know, pursue a profession. So now as a manager, my first thought was, wow, what would Giranagari be about these two main devotees, you know, leaving the project? But then I had to think, but the projects are for creating nice Vaishnavas and for giving them sufficient knowledge and facility to be able to go on for the rest of their life serving Krishna. Then I had to think, well, really, the best thing for them now is for them to move out and to arrange so that they can be able to, in the future, take care of a family.